Good morning. It's good to see everybody here. It's always good to be here myself. And this morning I'd like to talk about somebody that has always been a favorite of mine and that I think is often overlooked, and that's Jonathan, David's friend that we can read about in 1 Samuel. There's only a few chapters that we can read anything about Jonathan, and our introduction to him is both subtle and interesting. There's a lot to be said for the little bit where Jonathan is introduced in 1 Samuel chapter 13, and verse 3 really is what we're looking for, but verses 1 through 6. And this, as I said, it's kind of a subtle statement, but the impact is huge. So let's go ahead and start in verse 1, and we'll read through 6 in 1 Samuel 13. Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin, and the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it, and Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten the garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also was an abomination with the Philistines. And the people were gathered together after Saul to Gilgal, and the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which are on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash, eastward from Bethaven. And when the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves, and in thickets, and in rocks, and in high places, and in pits. And so it goes on. So, in essence, what it said here is Jonathan just started a war. It's really easy to read right over the top of that. It's a very subtle thing. Jonathan smote a garrison of the Philistines, but look what happened as a result. And our introduction to Jonathan is in verse 2. This is the first time that we hear of Jonathan. He's not even introduced as the king's son yet. It just says that the king took 2,000 men with him, and Jonathan, whoever this Jonathan is, had 1,000 men with him. And this Jonathan goes off and he smites a garrison of the Philistines, and the result is utter chaos. The Israelites, Saul sounds the trumpet and says, "Let all the Hebrews hear, aha, we smote a garrison of the Philistines." Well, the Philistines did the same thing, and they brought men as the sand on the seashore to retaliate against this threat that Jonathan had caused. So, in essence, this little bit that we read here, our introduction to Jonathan is, Jonathan had 1,000 men and he attacked the Philistines and started a war. And if we read on in chapter 13, we find that the Hebrews fled in terror, and they went and they hid themselves in caves. And the Philistines, because of their show of force in response to this, were able to enact rules and basically rule over Israel for a short period of time here. And we'll pick up in verse 19, and we'll read the aftermath of what happened as a result of Jonathan striking the Philistines. So we'll pick up in verse 19, we'll read through 23. "Now there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel. For the Philistines said, 'Lest the Hebrews make themselves sword or spears.' But all the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share, and coulter, and his axe, and his mattock. Yet they had a file for the mattocks, and for the coulters, and for the forks, and for the axes, and to sharpen the goads. And it came to pass in the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan, but with Saul and with Jonathan his son was there found. And the garrison of the Philistines went out of the passage of Michmash." So we find that the Philistines were able to remove all the smiths and remove all the swords and the spears from all Israel. The Philistines really took over here. And we find a little later on, we'll read it in a minute, that the Philistines had slaves from among the Israelites that they had picked up and that they had stolen from Israel. And so notice what it said. They had a file for the axes and for their gear. For to sharpen all of their stuff, there was a file. Do you think the Philistines were using files to sharpen their stuff, to sharpen their swords? No, the grinding wheel is one of the oldest technologies that there is. The smiths had a wheel and basically a kind of like a bicycle pedal, a pump that you'd step on it and cause the wheel to rotate, and it sharpened things very quickly. But for the Israelites, when they came down to sharpen their pruning forks and their coulters and axes and mattocks, all of their farming equipment, the Philistines gave them a file that they could use. Now, how effective is that, really? So we see that the Israelites are oppressed here primarily because of the actions of Jonathan. This is really easy to overlook in seeing who Jonathan is, and in reading this, it's really easy to overlook what happened here and read the strait that Israel is in, and it's really easy to see how they come out of it, because Jonathan, as we're going to find out, he was a man of faith. And I want to talk about Jonathan as a role model this morning, because it's easy to look to David and to look to Joshua and to look to some of these biblical characters, but Jonathan is often overlooked, as I said. And one of the reasons that I believe that is because this book is about Jesus. And so the primary character becomes David very quickly, and Christ came through David, not Jonathan. And so even though Jonathan was a man of faith, and we're going to read some of the things that he did here, the point and the purpose of this book is to bring us to Christ from start to finish. And so the story doesn't follow Jonathan in the way that it follows David. And so we're going to read, though, of Jonathan's character. And I want to examine his character this morning and see that even though the scriptures don't focus on him, primarily because it's a book about Christ, he is still nonetheless a character, a man that we can look up to and that we can try to model ourselves after. And first off, I want to discuss his faith. And if we go to next chapter, chapter 14, and we'll pick up in verse 6. And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, "Come and let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few." So notice his reasoning here. His reasoning is, God's not restrained. He's not incapable of saving by many or by few. It doesn't matter what kind of army that you have with you. And so Jonathan says to his armor bearer, "Let's go over to this garrison, because God can save by many or by few." And by few, he means few. He's talking about himself and his armor bearer. He's not taking 1,000 men with him as he did before. And his armor bearer said, verse 7, unto him, "Do all that is in your heart. Turn, behold, I am with you according to what is in your heart." Then said Jonathan, "Behold, we will pass over unto these men, and we will discover ourselves unto them. If they say to us, 'Tarry, we come to you, until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place, and we will not go up unto them. But if they say to us, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up. For the Lord has delivered them into our hand, and this will be a sign unto us." And both of them discovered themselves unto the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, "Behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes wherewith they have hid themselves." And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us, and we will show you a thing." And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord has delivered them into the hand of Israel." And Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet, and his armor bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer slew after him. And that first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men, within as it were a half acre of land, which a yoke of oxen might plow. And there was trembling in the host of the field among all the people, the garrison and the spoilers. They also trembled, and the earth quaked, as it was a very great trembling. And then, so Jonathan boldly goes up to these Philistines, and he says, "Here's what we're going to do. When we make ourselves known, and they can see us, if they tell us you wait there, we'll come to you." Then we better get out of here because God hasn't delivered them. But if they say, "Come up to us," then we'll take that to mean that God has delivered them into our hand. So Jonathan and his armor bearer, think about this from the armor bearer's point of view too for just a moment. We just learned that there were no swords or spears in the hand of all Israel, right? Only Saul and Jonathan had a sword. Nobody else had any weapons. His armor bearer is going up there with a shield. He doesn't have a weapon to start with. We read that he slew after Jonathan. So pretty easy to see what happens here. Once Jonathan starts killing people, then there's weapons laying around and the armor bearer can get hold of something and he can fight too. But the faith of the armor bearer here, when he says, "Whatever's in your heart to do, then I'll do whatever's in your heart," we see a lot of faith from the armor bearer too here. He's going up with nothing but a shield. Because I believe what it says. When it said that there were no swords or spears in Israel and only Saul the king and Jonathan his son had swords, I believe that to be accurate. I believe that's true. And so when we read that the armor bearer slew after him, I don't think he started with a sword. I think that's fair to say. We just learned that there weren't any swords. So Jonathan, when these guys say, hey, come up here, we want to show you something," Jonathan says, "Come on, God's delivered him into our hand," and he goes on to charge against 20 men. Jonathan is a man of faith. He's a go-getter. So picking up in verse 16, I want to read verse 16 and verse 23, because Jonathan's entire intent was, the Lord can save by many or by few. And so he strikes this garrison. And I want to read the result in verse 16 and verse 23. "And the watchmen of Saul in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went on beating down one another." So here's another one of those instances where something happens in the camp and it causes confusion and they start fighting against each other. They didn't know how many were there. They didn't realize there were only two. It doesn't make any sense that two men would attack a garrison. And so they begin fighting with one another. And then verse 23, "So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Bethaven." Now you can read the in-between and see what happened, that as Saul and his men got wind of what was going on, they took up arms and joined the fray. But the answer in the scriptures is that God is not withholden, he's not restrained, that he can save by many or by few. And so when Jonathan attacked these 20 men, 2 versus 20, and they prevailed, the Philistines then began fighting with each other. And so the Lord saved by few. And then in 1 Samuel 20, fast forward a little bit, we'll do a little bit of jumping around because as I said before, the account of Jonathan is only over a few chapters from the time that we meet him till the time of his death. And in chapter 20, we find that Jonathan is trying to argue with his father on behalf of David. And so beginning in verse 27, we'll read through 33. And it came to pass on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, that David's place was empty. And Saul said unto Jonathan his son, Wherefore comes not the son of Jesse to meet, neither yesterday nor today? And Jonathan answered, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, Let me go, I pray you, for our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he has commanded me to be there. And now if I have found favor in your sight, let me get away, I pray you, and see my brethren. Therefore he comes not to the king's table. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said unto him, You son of a perverse and rebellious woman, do not I know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own confusion and under the confusion of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives upon the ground, you shall not be established, nor your kingdom. Wherefore, now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, Wherefore shall he be slain? What has he done? And Saul cast a javelin at him to smite him, whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. So Jonathan obviously didn't know that that was going to happen. He didn't expect that. But Saul's statement, Saul's question, don't you know that as long as the son of Jesse lives, your kingdom will not be established? Jonathan knew that. Jonathan's faith was such that whatever God willed, he was going to abide by. And when God chose that David should be the next king and not Jonathan, Jonathan never wavered at that. He never questioned it. He was fully willing to serve David as king. And we'll read some other passages on that note a little bit later. But Jonathan didn't care about the kingdom. He chose God's will over his own. It didn't matter that Saul, his father, had been king. It didn't matter that David was the son of a shepherd and he would now be king. Jonathan was perfectly willing to accept that. And that is a trait that all of us could learn from and need to have. It's very difficult to let our own desires go, especially when it's something like be king or to not be king. I'm never going to have to make a decision like that in my lifetime, to be king or to not be king. And Jonathan was willing to not be king, let that go for the sake of God's will. Which brings us to another trait of Jonathan. Jonathan was a man of loyalty. If we go back to 1 Samuel 17, we'll read the end of this. I don't know what Jonathan was doing while Goliath was parading himself and rebuking God and bringing reproach on Israel and on God. But after David returned, we'll just pick up in verse 57 and we'll read a little bit into 18. We'll read into 18 verse 5. And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. That's talking about Goliath. And Saul said to him, Whose son are you, young man? And David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garments, even his sword and his bow, and to his girdle. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of all Saul's servants. Notice what it was that knit Jonathan to David, as it said. So when he was done speaking, what David had just done is deliver all Israel, basically. This is the same thing that Jonathan had done in chapter 14, as he smote the garrison of the Philistines, and we'll read a little bit more about what took place there. But you see a kindred spirit here. David and Jonathan just essentially did the same thing. Jonathan removed the reproach from Israel in going up and slaying the garrison, which resulted in the defeat of the Philistines and the spoiling of the Philistines. And David just did the same thing. He slew the giant and removed the reproach from Israel, and the Israelites went and slew the Philistines and spoiled them and took back some of their land and some of their place in the world, as it were. And so there's a kindred spirit here between David and Jonathan. And then in chapter 19, we find in verses 1 through 7. And Saul spoke to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David, and Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeks to kill you. Now therefore, I pray you, take heed to yourself until the morning, and abide in a secret place and hide yourself, and I will go and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will commune with my father about you, and what I see, and what I see, that will I tell you. And Jonathan spoke good unto David and of David unto his father, and unto him, and said unto him, let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been to you very good. And he did put his life in his hand and slew the Philistine. And the Lord wrought great salvation for all Israel, and you saw it, and did rejoice. Why then will you sin against the innocent blood to slay David without a cause? And Saul hearkened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul sware, as the Lord lives, he shall not be slain. And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan showed him all those things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in time past. So here Jonathan mends the bridge and brings David and Saul back together again. He goes out of his way, and again, this is in spite of his own personal benefit from doing that. If he does not try to benefit David, then he's going to become king. But by putting himself out for David, we see that his loyalty is to the fact that David hasn't done anything wrong. He's an innocent man. And so you could say that he was disloyal to his father, but the fact of the matter is David hadn't done anything wrong. And so he's not being disloyal here. He's being loyal to that which is right. David hasn't done anything wrong. And so his loyalty lies with who's in the right. He's not sheltering a criminal. He's not trying to help somebody who's done wrong. He's trying to help somebody who was innocent. And back to 1 Samuel 20 again. Verses 18 through 22 this time. This is before Jonathan went and spoke to his father. Picking up in 18 through 22. Then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon, and you shall be missed, because your seat will be empty. And when you have stayed 3 days, and you shall go down quickly, and come to the place where you did hide yourself when the business was in hand, and shall remain by the stony Zel, and I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof, as though I shot at a mark. And behold, I will send a lad, saying, go and find the arrows. If I expressly say to the lad, behold, the arrows are on this side of you, take them, then you come, for there is peace to you, and no hurt, as the Lord lives. But if I say thus to the young man, behold, the arrows are beyond you, go your way, for the Lord has sent you away. So Jonathan here makes a plan. He's going to go to his father and discuss on David's behalf, as he did before. And if things go well, he's going to send a sign to David. And if things go poorly, he's going to send a sign to David and allow David to understand and go away secretly. So again, he chooses his friendship over his kingship, over the possibility of becoming king. Now the next trait that I'd like to look at is he was a man of repentance. And we can read about something a little on the strange side here in chapter 14. As the men are pursuing the Philistines, picking up in verse 23, we already read verse 23 about the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Beth-Aven. We'll read on through verse 26. And the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eats any food until evening, that I may be avenged of my enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. And all they of the land came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped, and no man put his hand to his mouth, for they feared the oath. Okay, so we see here that Saul puts basically a curse on the people and says, nobody's allowed to eat anything until my enemies have been avenged. And then we find in verse 27 that Jonathan didn't know anything about that. We'll read through verse 38 here. But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath, wherefore he put forth the end of his rod that was in his hand, and dipped it in the honeycomb, and put it to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Then answered one of the people and said, your father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed be the man that eats any food this day. And the people were faint. And then said Jonathan, my father has troubled the land. See, I pray you, how my eyes have been enlightened, because I have tasted a little of this honey. How much more if haply the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies which they found? For had there not been much greater slaughter among the Philistines? And they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very faint. And the people flew upon the spoil, and took sheep and oxen and calves, and slew them on the ground, and the people did eat them with the blood. And they told Saul, saying, behold, the people sin against the Lord, and that they eat with the blood. And he said, you have transgressed, roll a great stone to me this day. And Saul said, disperse yourselves among the people, and say to them, bring me here every man his ox, every man his sheep, and slay them here, and eat them. And do not sin against the Lord in eating with the blood. And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night and slew them there. And Saul built an altar to the Lord. And the name of the first altar, which the same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. And Saul said, let us go down after the Philistines by night and spoil them until morning light. And let us not leave a man of them. And they said, do whatsoever seems good to you. Then said the priest, let us draw near here unto God. And Saul asked counsel of God, shall I go down after the Philistines? Will you deliver them into the hand of Israel? But he answered him not that day. And Saul said, draw near here, all the chief of the people, and know and see wherein this sin has been this day. So at least Saul had the sense to understand that when God refused to answer, it was probably because of sin. And so they inquired of God, shall we go against the Philistines? And there was no answer. He didn't just take license and say, okay, well, let's go ahead and go get the Philistines. Saul at least had the sense to say, well, there's probably sin in the camp, and we need to get to the bottom of this before we go on. So in verse 39, we'll go ahead and read through 46. For as the Lord lives, which saves Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die. But there was not a man among all the people that answered him. Then he said to all Israel, be on one side, and I and Jonathan my son be on the other side. And the people said to Saul, do what seems good to you. Therefore, Saul said to the Lord God of Israel, give a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken, but the people escaped. And Saul said, cast lots between me and Jonathan, my son. And Jonathan was taken. And Saul said to Jonathan, tell me what you have done. And Jonathan told him and said, I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in my hand, and lo, I must die. And Saul answered, God do so to more and more also, for you shall surely die, Jonathan. And the people said to Saul, shall Jonathan die, who has wrought this great salvation in Israel? Not so. As the Lord lives, shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground. For he has wrought with God this day. So the people rescued Jonathan, that he die not. And Saul went up from following the Philistines, and the Philistines went to their own place. So, basically, what happens here is Jonathan fessed up. He said, yeah, I did it, and if the penalty is death, then I accept it. What more could you ask from somebody? It's kind of the same thing that we saw with Jonah. I don't know why everybody likes to ride out the lot. Nobody wants to speak up when the lot is first being cast and say, oh, this is probably something I did. Nobody likes to do that. When Achan had stolen the spoil from Jericho, he waited until the lot came all the way down to him, and then he fessed up. And when Jonah is on the ship and the sailors are casting lots, he waited until the lot fell on him, and then he fessed up. And we see the same thing here with Jonathan. I don't really understand why that is. When people first started casting lots, it's kind of like, well, yeah, I did it. But at any rate, he fessed up and submitted to whatever punishment was going to be given out. That there's not anything else that we can ask of a person than that. This is a character trait that we should all be willing to have. When we make a mistake, own it and be ready to face the consequences. And lastly, the thing that I want to look at with Jonathan is he was a man of God. And this is more commendable than any of the other traits. You could kind of put this up there with a man of faith, but there's a difference between being a man of faith and a man of God. And I want to address that difference here. So if we go to chapter 23 and verses 15 to 18, and David saw that Saul was come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in the wood. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you, and you shall be king over Israel, and I will be next unto you. And that also my father Saul knows. And they two made a covenant before the Lord, and David abode in the wood, and Jonathan went into his house. Now, it's easy to overlook, but twice here it says, makes reference to God. It says that Jonathan strengthened David's hand in God, in verse 16, and then it said that they made a covenant before the Lord. Jonathan puts God first, both the will of God, and again, we see that he says that David will be king, and that he will be second unto David. And so he doesn't care about what he wants. He's already put himself second. But on top of that, he has we see that he puts God first in making his covenant, and in strengthening David, he does that in God. And then if we go back to chapter 14 and we look again at verse 6, Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. And then fast forward to verse 10. But if they say to us, come up, then we will go up, for the Lord has delivered them into our hand, and this will be a sign unto us. Jonathan is putting his whole trust in God. He's putting God first and putting God's ability, all the credit goes to God here. He doesn't take any credit for himself. And then in chapter 20, in verses 35 to 42, "And it came to pass in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field at the time appointed with David, him and the lad that was with him. And he said to the lad, run now and find the arrows which I shoot. And the lad ran, and he shot an arrow beyond him. And when the lad was come into the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan cried after the lad and said, is not the arrow beyond you? And Jonathan cried after the lad, make haste and do not stay. And Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the lad knew not anything, and only Jonathan and David knew about the matter. And Jonathan gave his artillery to the lad and said to him, go and carry these to the city. And as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of his place toward the south and fell on his face to the ground and bowed himself three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another until David exceeded. And Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord be between me and you, and between my seed and your seed forever. And he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city." Notice it was Jonathan doing the speaking here. Jonathan said to David, between my seed and your seed, the Lord will be between us and the Lord will be for us. And they made a covenant and an oath in the presence of the Lord. And we see that Jonathan is the one doing the speaking. Jonathan is the instigator of this oath. And so this is a man who puts God first in even the little things, in all that he does. And this is an example for us. And so in closing, I like to do lessons like this once in a while, where we look at do a character study. Because we have passages like this in Philippians 4, verses 8 and 9. And we have so much negativity right now. We'll get dragged down if we focus on the things that are negative. And so if we read this, Philippians 4, 8 and 9. "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Those things that you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you." Our instruction is to not focus on all the negativity. And there's so much in the media and so much going on in our country right now. It is easy to get bogged down in the things that are negative. It's easy to get depressed. It's easy to get pulled down and say, what is going on with this world? And so I like to take a moment and just breathe and say, let's look at somebody who has character that we can all admire and that we can try to emulate in our lives. And let's focus on the positive for a little bit here. Jonathan was a man of faith. He was full of loyalty. He repented, and he was a man of God. And if we can take those positive traits and put them in our lives and dwell on those things, we'll do a whole lot better than all the negative that we could think about and say, well, I don't want to be like that, or I don't want to do that. It's good to just take a step back and regain our focus. And That's the point this morning, to bring us back into focus and think about who we ought to be. Who are you this morning? Who have you been? And who would you like to be? And for me, I really like Jonathan. Jonathan is one of my favorite characters of the Old Testament. And he has a lot of sound traits that I want to emulate and be like. And so I want to think about the positive this morning. And if there's anything that you need at this time, now's the time to make it known. Now's the time to make it right. As together we stand and we sing the song that was selected.